It's Friday, June 20th, and it's 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Hey, Stashers, it looks like we made it to the weekend once again, so we've got an extra special Friday entertainment stash for you. We return with Steve Bloom, the webmaster at celebstoner.com, with more news about celebrity stoners in the news, and we got a little bit on Snoop Dogg, and of course, Mary Louise Parker in the hit Showtime show Weeds, which just debuted its fourth season. And then also on the entertainment front, we'll be interviewing Jonathan Levine, who's the director of a new movie coming out in July called The Whackness. This is quite a significant movie. It's a mainstream movie that features marijuana quite significantly in the story. It's the story of Sir Ben Kingsley, who plays a psychiatrist who trades therapy for marijuana with a young man who's a marijuana dealer. So this is quite an interesting show, and Jonathan will be on the stash later on today to tell you all about it. It debuts July 3rd in New York and L.A., and then it will spread from there. So check out The Whackness in theaters when you get a chance. Also, we've got our Friday musical break. Cannabis Carrie is going to serve us up some more great cannabis tunes, so stay tuned for those. And of course, this weekend we'll have our weekend music stash, where you can pick up the last 10 songs from the Daily Audio Stash, all in one easy-to-play, easy-to-listen-to podcast. All right, everybody, so sit back and relax with a little bit of Panama Red and enjoy your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Marijuana found on boy, age 4, at a preschool. From the Buffalo News, Lockport, New York. At the Niagara County Head Start program at Grace Episcopal Church, a staff member noticed the boy walking strangely on Wednesday morning and told the boy to take off his sneaker when the boy said he was in pain. Inside the sneaker, staff found a bag with several smaller bags of marijuana. Police were quickly called. Both Lockport Police and Niagara County Child Protective Services investigated, and by 4 p.m. Wednesday, the Niagara County Drug Task Force, armed with a search warrant, had entered the Washburn Street home of the boy's mother, Sherry Sanny, age 27, and seized a small quantity of marijuana. Sanny and Joshua Bryant, age 21, of Harvest Ridge Way, were arrested at the apartment and charged with endangering the welfare of a child. Acting Police Chief Michael Knyth said daycare center staff did everything right. Quote, "The children were never in any danger and the drugs were immediately confiscated," end quote. Okay, the children were never in any danger, so we charged the mom with endangering the welfare of a child? Aside from the illegality of the marijuana, what danger was the child in? Foot pain? It seems obvious to me that someone, likely mom, just hid the marijuana in the kid's sneaker and forgot about it. I feel confident that her intention wasn't to get the four-year-old high or to have him deal weed to his four-year-old classmates. Now, you could argue that it is a dangerous situation for a mom to be having marijuana in the home in that it is illegal, and she was growing marijuana and police are alleging that she was set up for distribution. But still, people tend to jump on the idea that this person is some sort of criminal drug dealer when in all likelihood she was growing for herself and maybe dealing to a couple of friends just to make a little bit of extra income. So the main danger that that child may have faced was most likely from SWAT teams breaking into the house with automatic weapons. Judge dismisses woman's religious drug use argument. From Bay Minette, Alabama. Brenda Shoup said Thursday that she grew up in a Southern Baptist church. In recent years, she has struggled to find the spiritual fulfillment she has been looking for while exploring other denominations. Her religious belief and understanding, however, hit a turning point in nursing school when she read about marijuana's disassociation side effect, she said. That side effect, she said, helped her get closer to God as it quieted all the voices in her head and helped her, quote, rise above the mundane and see that you are part of a bigger picture, end quote. The Shoups argued that since their arrest for growing 28 marijuana plants in their backyard, they have started a ministry in their Robertsdale home and serve as missionaries for the Universal Orthodox Church, which is based in Atlanta. The Christian denomination believes marijuana has biblical origins and was a key ingredient in the holy anointing oil of Moses and the christening oil of Jesus Christ, according to testimony in court documents. The Shoup's attorneys also argue that they were protected by the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act and the Alabama Religious Freedom Amendment because their religion mandates the cultivation and consumption of cannabis. Baldwin County Assistant District Attorney Christopher Murray, however, successfully argued that while the Shoups may have believed marijuana was a key part of their relationship with God, they didn't get involved with the church until after they were arrested. Murray said, quote, a belief, under law, is not a religion, end quote. Judge Wilters agreed. He also said if the court gave the religious protection argument credence, it could promote drug abuse. It would also be difficult to determine whether drugs were being used for religious purposes or illegally, Wilters said. That would require pre-World War II measures, the judge said, such as when Germany required Jews to wear the Star of David. Wilters said, quote, I don't think this county wants to consent to doing something such as that, end quote. I think this is the first time someone has ever invoked the Nazis to explain why we can't have a religious right to use cannabis. I guess the judge imagines that to separate the acceptable, decent religious users from the reprehensible, evil recreational users, we'd have to make the religious ones wear a big pot leaf signifying their beliefs, kind of like that Star of David. Hey, if it kept me from ever being arrested or P-tested for weed, I'd be glad to slap a pot leaf on my jacket. The Religious Freedom Restoration Act recognized the right of certain native tribal religions to use hallucinogens that have long traditions within their church. There is a complicated series of tests that courts use to determine if the religious practice is sincere, and to date, no one has successfully passed those tests for a marijuana-using religion, despite the assertions of certain THC ministries that sell you a $250 get-out-of-jail-free kit, supposedly proving your religious use of cannabis. All a religious argument for cannabis use will get you in court is plenty of time in a cell to read your holy book. That's not to say there isn't truly legitimate religious use of cannabis as a sacrament. I know plenty of sincere religious practitioners, Eddie Lepp comes to mind, that are using cannabis to further their understanding of their God. But they are never going to get the consideration that the ayahuasca-using tribes got from the courts because, frankly, there are just too damn many of us smoking weed, and the courts know a religious use decision opens the floodgates to every cannabis smoker suddenly getting religion. There will always be some technicality, or just outright judicial malfeasance, to prevent these cases from going forward. Disabled man fights for medical marijuana. Orange County, California. Charles Monson, age 45, was paralyzed in 1979 when he and a friend decided to go for a swim. Monson recalls, quote, I dove under a wave, hit a shallow spot, and broke my neck. I was paralyzed instantly and was floating face down, end quote. Monson, who is confined to a wheelchair and has lost most of the use of his hands, tried to remain active. Nevertheless, he says he lives in constant pain and discomfort. He says, quote, "My brain isn't able to constantly monitor the muscles in my legs. Any little stimulus, like being touched or moving my wheelchair or sitting still for a while and then moving, will trigger a muscle spasm, big ones, that will yank my body to the side," end quote. As a result, Monson was chronically sleep-deprived to the point of falling asleep behind the wheel of his specially equipped van. Doctors prescribed muscle relaxants and various other seizure medications, but Monson says he didn't like the side effects. Monson says, quote, "I had tried Valium, Baclofen, Gabapentin. That gave me a sense of not being sharp in my mind and just feeling kind of woozy. I tried Marinol, which is synthetic marijuana. It's very hard to dose. It's either not very effective, or when it gets to the point of being effective, you're loopy," end quote. Monson says a friend recommended marijuana in the 1980s, and after trying it, he said he found relief. Quote, "I smoked it in bed, and I slept better than I ever had. The other thing that makes cannabis so much more effective than any other of the spasticity drugs is that it allows me, rather than just treating my spasticity, to manage it," end quote. So, naturally, on October 30th, 2007, at 7 in the morning, police were dispatched to the home of this legal California medical marijuana patient armed with assault rifles and bulletproof vests, handcuffing this quadriplegic man and his care provider, and ransacking the house to discover 16 plants, 2.5 ounces of medicine, and an elaborate grow system. After confiscating it all as evidence, the district attorney declined to prosecute the case. Now, Charles Monson can add post-traumatic stress to his list of ailments, as the raid so terrified him that he refuses to grow again until his case is resolved. He fortunately has the assistance of a local dispensary, Nature's Wellness, which itself was raided by the DEA back in March. If only the Orange Police Department would get the message that the district attorney clearly has. The people of California passed Prop 215 partially because they thought SWAT team raids on quadriplegics were cruel and unnecessary.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 12 states today, and THCF has medical clinics in 6 of those states. Our physicians help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help them obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, Colorado, Nevada, Hawaii, and California. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at www.hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
All right, after a couple of weeks of absence on my part from being out of town, I'm finally able to get back in touch with Steve Bloom from CelebStoner.com, who's going to bring us all the latest celebrity and entertainment cannabis news. So, Steve, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Russ, how are you?
Oh, doing good. Looking forward to the summer events that are coming up here pretty soon. And one of the events that just got done happening here, one of the music festivals, is the Bonnaroo Festival. And looks like they had a good time out there at that festival, according to what I'm seeing here on Celeb Stoner. But a few arrests, I see?
Well, that's kind of par for the course at the festival. There's 80,000 people. Well, actually, this year was a little less, closer to 70,000, but still, it's a huge crowd. People go to the farm in Tennessee, the Manchester area, kind of mid-state, for this big festival that this year was headlined by Metallica and Pearl Jam and Phil and Friends and 150 other groups. They have 8 to 10 stages going on at a time. It's a huge campground. So it's inevitable you're going to have some arrests. So this year, the arrest total was kind of similar to last year. There were 78 arrests, mostly for marijuana possession. Last year, there were 73. There were a few more citations given out. I'm not really sure what the difference is at times, but there were over 200 citations given out. 124. Last year was 200. Interestingly, one of the bands that got a citation was Disco Biscuits, who were performing one of the late night sets, and en route to the festival, they were pulled, their bus was pulled over, and they weren't arrested, but they were cited for having marijuana on board. There's a fine line between being arrested and being cited. But basically, you know, it's pretty standard stuff down there, with the number of people there, with the amount of people smoking marijuana and other drugs on site. I'm not sure how the arrests go down there, because I've been to Bonnaroo. I wasn't there last year, this year, but I've been there in the past. And, you know, in the past, I really haven't seen, certainly not on the main concert venue. There aren't really police wandering around there arresting anybody, but I think most of it's probably in the campgrounds. The campgrounds sprawl quite a bit, and the police must have some sort of access to the campgrounds to kind of keep things under control.
Sure, sure. Now, on the television side of things, we're all very happy, those of us anyway that have pay cable and the Showtime channel here, that we're getting another season. This is the fourth season of Weeds. I think that's just great that we have a mainstream show here that prominently features marijuana going into its fourth season.
Well, what's happening with Weeds also, being that it's, you know, now in its fourth year, it's kind of caught on, to the broader, I think, audience out there, not just the stoners who've been following Weeds, you know, and other, you know, TV fans, of course, over the last 3 years, but it seems like, just like an event like Bonnaroo gets bigger and bigger year after year, you know, Weeds is sort of getting more and more popular, and that's evidenced by the fact that this opening episode for season four, which was on Monday, and people can kind of catch on Showtime throughout the week, got the biggest ratings ever for a Showtime episode, ever. And the biggest one prior to that was their show Dexter. So the show is, you know, is very popular, and I guess they must be getting more and more people signing up because they want to catch the show. A lot of people have different ways of watching. You know, the sort of, if you're not a subscriber to Showtime, a lot of people will wait till the DVD from the season comes out. And the way Showtime does it, and probably a lot of other networks do it, is that, you know, when the fourth season is starting to air on TV, they release the third season DVD like a few weeks ahead of time, so people can kind of catch up and breathlessly, you know, watch 12 episodes in a row. And even though they missed, you know, last season, now they can kind of catch up, and then maybe they're going to buy into Showtime finally, and they can sort of like follow chronologically what's going on in the show and not really miss things. So anyway, what's happening on Weeds for season four, end of season three, the house went up in smoke. There was a big wildfire in Southern California that was actually set by one of Nancy, who is Mary Louise Parker's associates, who's a drug dealer, and he went a little overboard to get back at an adversary of Nancy's who was growing marijuana outdoors, and he actually set the field on fire, and that caused a huge wildfire that kind of, you know, mirrored, you know, what has been going on in Southern California quite a bit over the years, you know, these big wildfires they have several times a year. So anyway, it kind of was a good excuse to sort of wrap up a lot of loose ends in the show after, for the first 3 years, and move into another direction. And so the, you know, Weeds is about this suburban marijuana dealer, you know, played by Mary Louise Parker, Nancy Botwin, and the whole theme was around how unlikely it would be for this woman, you know, to be selling marijuana in this community. Now they've left Agrestic behind. They've gone south to a town they call Red Mar, which is near the Mexico border around San Diego on the U.S. side. And Nancy's father-in-law, she's a widower, is being played by Albert Brooks, the great comedian, and so they brought him into the show for, I think, a short run this season, and they've gone down looking for a place to stay, and also Andy, the Justin Kirk character, who's Nancy's brother-in-law, Len, the Albert Brooks character, is his father, and they haven't seen each other, they've been kind of estranged, so they go down to, you know, they need a place to stay, so they basically knock on his door, and they end up camping out in his place for a while in this first sort of part of the of the season. I've seen several of the episodes in advance. I don't want to really give too much away, but I don't think Albert Brooks is going to stay in the for the full season. So basically what's going on is now they're down there, Nancy's resuming business, and she's still involved with Guillermo, the guy who basically started the fire, he's training her to be a mule to bring marijuana across the Mexico border. So basically, that's kind of what you're following, and you're following the, you know, the different elements of the storyline. And also, the one thing that's connected to last season is, you know, what happened with the grow house that didn't burn down, which was next door to Nancy's house, which did burn down because Nancy set the house on fire, but not the grow house, which was next door, and that was her friend Celia, who's played by Elizabeth Perkins. Well, Celia's taking the rap, and she's actually in jail now for the grow house. And she was sort of partially involved. She owned the house. It was given to her by a lover who was played by Matthew Modine last season. And basically, they fingered her, and she keeps on saying, no, go find Nancy Botwin. So the DA is kind of on Nancy's trail, as they had been for years. So they're going to find her down in Ren Mar, and there's going to be some, you know, adventures in that respect. So between what happened last season, trying to wrap up the loose ends of the grow house, and who's going to get charged with it, or if anybody's going to get charged, or if Nancy's going to get charged. Meanwhile, you know, going deeper into now the smuggling business of bringing marijuana and people across the border. That's what you kind of see. And there's been a few less characters. The Conrad and Hylia characters are gone from the show. Conrad was the grower. Hylia, her cousin, they kind of were the team, you know, and also Conrad and Nancy had a little affair last season. So that's end of the storyline is over. And another favorite on the show, Kevin Nealon is still on the show. He's kind of hasn't really been too involved yet, but I think he's going to get a little bit more involved in the drug business as the season goes on. So it's an exciting beginning to the fourth season for sure.
Excellent. And of course, like you said, people can go get the DVDs from seasons 1 through 3 to catch up if they want to get involved in the storyline.
Exactly.
One more note that we've got here. Snoop Dogg, of course, has a new album out, and he just released a second single on this that should be a good one for the medical marijuana movement.
It is. You know, it's Snoop Dogg Goes Country. It's a song on his album Ego Tripping called My Medicine, and I've heard the song. You know, it's been on the album, you know, since its release, and, you know, it's kind of been catching on a little bit, but Snoop was in Amsterdam recently, and so was Willie Nelson. They had back-to-back shows at the Milkveg venue there, and they played with each other. Both did a guest, you know, for each other on each other's show. So Snoop came out for Willie's show, Willie came out for Snoop's show. And Snoop did one of Willie's songs, and Willie did one of Snoop's, which was My Medicine. And while they were there, they did a video for My Medicine. So the video has been released, and Willie Nelson is in the video. He may or may not be singing because he can't really hear his voice that well, because it's really just the song that was originally cut, I'm sure, for the album. And it is considered a tribute to Johnny Cash, not exactly to Willie Nelson. At least that's what Snoop says at the beginning, you know, this is for my man Johnny Cash. And it's just a fun song. It's really kind of a ditty. It's really short. It's you know, and it is an ode to, you know, what Snoop Dogg's been talking about quite a bit over the last year, couple of years, that, you know, marijuana is now his medicine, that he has a prescription for marijuana, and that it's all about medical use for him. So on the song, he says things like, you know, I got to have that medicine, prescription medicine, baby. You know, and he goes, you know, purple, orange, green, the more dedicated, the more medicated. I'm high all the day, every day. And then he finishes with, they say you can't buy me love, but you sure can buy me bud. That's pretty funny. I mean, there really hasn't been a song out there from a major performer like Snoop Dogg really in a while to, you know, really discuss marijuana. It's been kind of quiet among the musicians for marijuana over the last, you know, I mean, a couple of years. You know, there's been all the groups that have done things in the past, but there really hasn't been very much new material that's come out, you know, with marijuana as a focus of somebody's song, or a good line like the Tom Petty line, you know, let's get to the point, roll another joint, or things like that that really haven't been coming up too much lately. So Snoop Dogg finally, you know, it's taken him a while, but finally has penned, you know, his ode to medical marijuana. It's really great. It's a really nice little video, and it's a catchy little song. You'll find yourself singing along.
Excellent. Check that out on celebstoner.com. He's got links to the video as well. And I wonder what the Willie Nelson song was that Snoop Dogg played. Do you have an idea?
So, yeah, it's a song called I Ain't Superman on Willie's new album. Willie and Snoop both have new albums. And so, you know, Willie pitched in on My Medicine, and Snoop Dogg pitched in on I Ain't Superman. There's a video on the website as well. If you go to the current My Medicine clip and then go to the links that follow that, there's a link that'll say Willie and Snoop Dogg Rock Amsterdam, and it has a clip of Snoop Dogg on stage with Willie doing the version of I Ain't Superman.
Oh, that's excellent. Well, Steve, thanks for joining us again here on the Daily Audio Stash, and I want to encourage everyone to check out CelebStoner.com. Again, thanks for being here.
And not to mention, pick up my book, Pop Culture.
Oh, that's right. We've been playing the Pop Culture ad quite a bit, too. So, yeah, get that book, too.
Just say no.
No matter what you call it, it's a huge part of popular culture.
Where'd you learn that, Cheech?
Drug school.
You don't need weed school. You just need a copy of the new book, Pot Culture, the A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life.
Hey, this is great, man.
Even if you never smoked marijuana.
I never used marijuana. Sorry.
Don't think you smoked marijuana.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two and didn't inhale.
Or you used to smoke marijuana.
I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Pot Culture by former High Times editor Steve Bloom and Shirley Halperin will answer every question you ever had about marijuana culture.
Has that marijuana made it back up here yet?
Check out Pot Culture, the A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life at Amazon.com or visit PotCultureBook.com today.
Too bad, man. I just stopped smoking yesterday.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. You know, we get our party on come Friday, so today we pull out the big guns with probably one of the best named reefer bands out there, Johnny Reefer Seed and the High Rollers. What a great name. And this tune features none other than the underground culture hero, Afro Man. Today's musical hit will get you in the weed end mood with the track Light 'Em Up. An instant toker classic, today's hit has some easy guitar, some rock and roll, a little rap, and a lot of funk. Bringing some attitude is Johnny Reeverseed and Jacob County on guitar and vocals, Keith Hashman on bass, guitar, and keys and vocals, Joe McGillicuddy on drums, and Jay Rockstar on bass guitar. If that sounds like a full band, add Afro Man to the mix, and ain't no way you can stop the party. Stop by their MySpace page for some more Johnny Reefer Seed, some more High Rollers, and more rock and roll weed inspiration. We've got a link to that MySpace page up at our blog at stash.normal.org. This is Johnny Reefer Seed and the High Rollers with Light 'Em Up.
Burrito and a wine punch, and light 'em up. Light 'em up.
see. I need some weed to deal with life. I'm getting a divorce from my wife. I live every day on the road. On my back is a heavy load. I can't do a show unless I'm high. My eyelids glow, can't see my eye. If I get mad as hell, the police man throw me in jail. So that's why I get real high. Afro man, a real nice guy. I'm a marijuana Christian, you know what I mean?
Know what I mean?
My pastor is Reverend Ray Green. Singing on the mic with the bong hoes. Johnny Reaper seat at the highway. My girl.
Of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers, and nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana, and over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and co-workers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. My name is Keith Stropp, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
All right, here on the Daily Audio Stash, we got a very special guest joining us here today, Jonathan Levine, who is the director of a new movie coming out called The Whackness, and you may have read about this in High Times magazine this month. And Jonathan, welcome to the Daily Audio Stash.
Thank you very much. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know, I just saw a copy of the movie, The Whackness. Now, this movie stars Sir Ben Kingsley and Josh Peck, Olivia Thirlby, Method Man, Mary-Kate Olsen, got a really good cast there. Famke Janssen's in the cast.
Yep.
Why don't we give our listeners, before we start talking about it, just a kind of a brief plot synopsis of what The Whackness is about.
The Whackness is about a troubled young high school drug dealer in New York in 1994 who, in order to sort of resolve some of his personal issues, forms a relationship with a psychiatrist. And the relationship really centers around the fact that he trades, the psychiatrist gives him therapy, and in turn he gives him marijuana.
Yeah, I sure wish we could find more psychiatrists that were in that mindset. That would be very helpful.
More every day, man. I don't know. L.A., there are a few.
There you go. That's a good idea there. Now, Sir Ben Kingsley plays Dr. Jeffrey Squires, who is the therapist in this show, and delightful job he did on playing this character, who comes off as kind of a little bit immature. But why don't you describe a little bit of Ben Kingsley's character?
Well, he's kind of going through a midlife crisis, and I think that he doesn't really know it's interesting because he's actually going through many of similar things that our 17-year-old character is going through. He doesn't know what he wants to really be with in his life, and he's frequently his family kind of ignores him, and he's kind of bored professionally, and he really wants to cheat on his wife, really badly wants to cheat on his wife, and basically, you know, he's kind of going through the motions. One of the things that does make him happy is getting high every day. But other than that, there's not much in his life that's really kind of driving him. And I think that when he meets the Luke character, he really sees, you know, an opportunity to kind of seize the youth that he has missed for so long.
Yeah, it seems like kind of a carpe diem theme, you know, seize the day, especially in that one scene. You have one scene where it's kind of a silent scene. There's music in the background, but Kingsley is listening to, or Dr. Squires, I should say, is listening to all his patients. You know, you just see one patient one after the other, and it just seems like a dull, droning sort of life that he leads. And then the meeting Josh Peck's character, Luke Shapiro, just kind of gives him that ray of sunshine he's been looking for.
It does. It does in many ways, and it also it gives him kind of a wingman to go out and try to cheat on his wife and go through New York and try to sort of figure out what, you know, how he can be happy.
Now the movie, you know, marijuana is very central to this movie in that the character that Josh Peck is playing, the young marijuana dealer, and then of course the psychiatrist who's taking marijuana for the therapy payments. But it's not really a marijuana movie, is it?
Well, it's not. I don't think it's a pot movie in the way that, you know, that I'm used to. You know, for me, it's just a, you know, just like New York City is a character, and just like hip hop is a character. It's just another character in the movie. But certainly, it's one drug of many that are in a movie in which, you know, characters are choosing kind of what their coping mechanisms are, and for a lot of the characters, it does happen to be a pot. Can I say weed?
Oh, sure. Weed, pot, ganja, reefer, muggles.
Like it's so formal.
Oh, heck, whatever you want to call it.
And get on more intimate terms with it. Let's say weed.
Oh, weed is fine with me. Now, speaking of the weed here, was there any reluctance on the part of Sir Ben Kingsley, you know, very well-renowned actor?
Yeah.
Did he have any qualms about getting involved in a movie that would portray him smoking marijuana so frequently?
I mean, I don't think so. You know, it's nothing we ever talked about. I mean, I know that he tackled the character with a great deal of zeal and excitement. And I certainly never heard anything from him that he didn't, you know, he was trepidatious about this. Excuse me. I think that he got the fact that, you know, it's not a movie that makes an evaluative judgment about anything. Every character in the movie does things that are good for them, that are bad for them, and they're just trying to figure out what's right for them in many ways. And so the big thing we tried to do with this movie was not to judge anyone for anything they do or do not do. And I think he got that. He very much just connects to the character and what the character wants and what the character needs. And so that's, you know, that doesn't even allow room for judgment. If we start to judge our characters, then it just, you know, it all falls apart.
And I think that, you know, that was part of what I enjoyed so much about the movie, having, you know, I see a lot of these marijuana movies, having to refer to them in the podcast and such.
Yeah.
And so often there's the character that smokes weed, and then, you know, something bad's got to happen to them,
right,
as the punishment. And this movie really treats marijuana smoking, it's almost post, you know, the controversy. It's post-controversial at this point. And nobody even really refers to it in any manner, positive, negative, or indifferent. It's just there.
It's just there. I mean, that's I think a very accurate reflection of you know, of life, and that was very important to us. You know, this guy's not gonna go to jail for the rest of his life or get shot, or, you know, that just doesn't, you know, okay, maybe it happens, and actually I'm sure it does, but. That's an exception. That's not a rule. And I think that, you know, in the life in our film that we're trying to portray, there's just no room for that.
Now, you set the film in 1994 during the middle of Rudolph Giuliani's tenure as mayor, when he's trying to clean up New York City.
Yeah.
And really about the only negative perception of pot we get in the movie is the two transit cops that are trying to shake him down when they're doing some graffiti. But aside from that, why 1994? What made you want to set the movie in the middle of the 90s like that?
Well, beyond the fact that it's the year I graduated from high school, and that's kind of what started to inspire me. And then Once I started writing it, you know, I realized that there were kind of all these seminal things that happened that year, whether it's, you know, from hip hop culture kind of becoming this pervasive thing, to Kurt Cobain's suicide, to the OJ trial, to Giuliani becoming the mayor, to, you know, there's just this, all these kind of amazing things that were happening, at the time. And it just seemed like a very interesting backdrop, against which to set something. And beyond that, it was, you know, for me, just, Any sort of, whenever you do like something like this, which is sort of a coming of age thing, I think it's so much about. I mean, my memories of growing up or graduating, they're so vivid, you know, and it's so much about all the little details. And it, you know, I think for me to do it right, I had to go to a place where I remembered all these details. I just couldn't do that setting it in a contemporary setting, because I wouldn't be able to accurately depict what it was like to be 17.
The movie does is just infused with hip hop. The soundtrack is just greatest hits of 1994 almost. Yeah. It's a wonderful soundtrack.
Thank you.
And I love the juxtaposition of Josh's character being basically a white kid in New York, getting in the hip hop scene, and how some of the characters around him treat him as if, you know, he'd be more upset about Kurt Cobain. It's a nice comparison there.
Right. Well, yeah, it's true. And it's, you know, again, that just comes from authentic experience, you know, and, there are a lot of kids like Josh's character. And I think the great thing about 1994 was that was when hip hop culture was starting to embrace people of all races and all, you know, all levels of socioeconomic status or whatever. That it was something that was for everyone. And it was really just about the music, not so much about, you know, dividing it up into categories of who the music's for. And I think that was a great thing. I'm not sure how it's kind of progressed since then, but I think, that level of inclusion was something that I think people can be proud of.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that. And the movie works on so many levels too. You mentioned it's the kind of the coming of age story. One of the subplots here, without revealing too much, just has to do with Luke, Josh Peck's character, the dealer character, kind of falling in love for the first time and learning about, you know, the birds and the bees, and happens to be with the doctor's stepdaughter.
Right. Right.
And one thing I liked about this is how you know, it portrayed Josh. You know, he's a weed dealer. He seems very worldly in that respect, but yet in the respect of, you know, socialization and dating, he seemed really naive in a sense.
Yeah. Well, that was also pulled from my own personal experience as well. But I think it's for me, it's really fun to show kids making mistakes, teenagers making mistakes, and not being wiser than their years, even though the Luke character actually is in many ways wiser than his years. In the language of love, he's a very kind of new and inexperienced entity. But it's nice, it's always nice for me to show that, because I think I certainly identify with it. I certainly remember all the times I messed up with girls. I mean, I do it every day.
Don't we all? Now, one other thing, speaking of naivete, I just had one little comment I had to say. Could someone please tell Sir Ben to pull the stem on the bong?
Well, the bong, like the mechanics of the bong, that was kind of a thing on the set. It was, you know, there were I kept wanting to pull, you know, there's this whole part actually that we cut out where Luke tries to teach him about how to take a bong hit, and it really stemmed from the fact that Sir Ben had no experience with a bong, and I probably shouldn't have given him like a 4-footer. I probably should have given him a little one.
Dramatic license, right?
You know, man, that's just how it is. A lot of these Academy Award winners, they don't know how to pull a 4-foot bong hit.
Well, I don't know. Jack Nicholson, we go back to Easy Rider and such. I guess it depends on the star.
These are different times, my friend.
I guess they're different times, absolutely. All right, well, before we close things up, again, we're speaking with Jonathan Levine, who's the director of The Whackness. Let's tell our folks about how they can learn more about The Whackness and when it's coming out and all of that.
Absolutely. It's coming out July 3rd in New York and L.A., and then throughout the rest of July it's going to be opening in more and more theaters across the country. And I guess in order to find out where it's coming, when it's coming to your neck of the woods, go to thewhackness.com, a very cool website, and please go see it.
Excellent.
So I don't have to start dealing weed again.
Well, let's hope not. You can keep making the money as a director. Jonathan Levine, thank you for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash. We'll have links to all of that stuff up on our site at stash.normal.org.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with a cannabis quote from Lenny Bruce, the famous comedian. Quote, marijuana is rejected all over the world. Damned. In England, heroin is all right for outpatients, but marijuana? They'll put your ass in jail. I wonder why that is. The only reason could be to serve the devil. Pleasure. Pleasure, which is a dirty word in the Christian culture. End quote. Yes, and I've always said that the fight to end adult marijuana prohibition depends not so much on the science and the facts. We've got those behind us in spades. It has to do with the moral issue. Some people just feel that marijuana smoking is immoral, and until we can put their mindset in the idea that marijuana smoking is no more immoral than beer drinking, we'll still have prohibited marijuana. And the way that you can fight that is to stand up and let people know that you're a responsible cannabis consumer and they have nothing to fear. I'm Radical Russ. Have yourself a great weekend and enjoy the weekend musical stash coming up this weekend. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.